In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for another Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is the queen of power pop, Lisa Michaels. She's a singer-songwriter from Long Beach, California, who teamed up with the UK's Super 8 to come up with holiday tune, A Very Merry Christmas. We'll hear a bit of that now, followed by my interview with Lisa on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Manfred with you here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and for our Christmas Eve Coolest Conversations, I am joined today by the queen of power pop, singer and songwriter Lisa Michaels of Lisa Michaels and Super 8. The duo is responsible for this week's coolest song in the world, A Very Merry Christmas. How are you, Lisa?
I am great, Manfred. How are you?
Well, I am very excited about the holiday. You know, I got my my stockings hung by my chimney with care. And how about yourself? Are you down? First of all, you're in Long Beach, California?
Yep, absolutely. And it's everybody's really festive in our neighborhood. So it's very exciting.
Well, what do you do? What are some trimmings there around your place? Do you put up a tree? Do you have stockings? Is it got Christmas lights?
Oh, yeah.
How do you decorate?
We go crazy. We put up our plastic tree like right after Thanksgiving. So we've been pretty decked out like since November. It just goes by so fast. But yeah, we have our stockings and we did the outside lights. We have a backyard that we decorate. So yeah.
Well, cool. I was going to ask you about a tree and if you know, how long do you keep it up? But I guess if it's a plastic tree, you can keep it up year round. You could be one of those people that keeps Christmas in their hearts. Not only in their hearts all year round, but you could actually keep it going on all year round if you wanted to.
Exactly. So if you're not burnt out from Christmas itself and it's, you know, April, hey guys, let's do Christmas again.
So you live in Long Beach. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. I can't get out. I don't know why. It won't let me leave.
Was Christmas like a big deal in your home growing up with your family?
Definitely. And I was the kind of person that did actually play Christmas music all year long. Like if I couldn't sleep, my mom was a single mom for the first part of my life. And Christmas music was, strangely enough, my obsession. And if I get bored of a song, I put it on 45, you know, those 33 vinyl. That's right. That's crazy. But it's like, summer bells, summer bells. No.
So you could chipmunk along to the tunes.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Now, when I was a kid, I had one of these, you know, these record players that was kind of similar to what we used to see in elementary schools, a big giant square. And I think the elementary school ones could probably be used post-apocalyptic times. You know, they were like so heavy duty. So it wasn't quite as big as that, but similar to that. And it actually had a 78 speed on it too.
Oh, wow. That's fancy.
Oh yeah. I'm telling you, you know, so when you were growing up and was there any gift that you had ever asked for that you figured you'd never really get, but you did? What was like the one thing that you got and you're like, oh, I can't believe I got this?
It would be after my mom got married and my dad splurged because we could afford it, was that this amazing Barbie dream house. Not one of those like collapsible ones they have now. Like you can't get these kind of dream houses anymore. And it took a lot to put together. So just waking up to that was huge. I loved Barbies and sadly my, and I decorated it up till high school. I decorated it every Christmas, like just decked it out Christmas till I was in high school. And then my mom gave it away without telling me. I was so upset.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you had this, there was something about the Barbie house I was going to ask you. So it was like a several story Barbie thing?
Yeah. So it was amazing. Like it was double story and there was nothing painted on it that you had to use your imagination for. Like it was total hands on and plastic, and you get all the furniture separate. So each room was a box. So if you would have a living room set and it had real fabric, but you had to tape it on and just real stuff. And like now everything's just painted. Here is your, you open it and oh, there's your fake bed and it's not as fun.
So when you saw it, was it still in the box and you guys put it together or?
Yep. My dad put it together. So I never saw it unassembled.
You never saw it unassembled. You came down and it was just there.
Oh yeah. It's like getting a car, right? So you get this house with a bow on it and it's like, magic.
Well, that's funny because in my Christmases, it was there was G.I. Joe, and this is when G.I. Joe stood tall, right? America stood tall. G.I. Joe was a full 12 inches. And woe to the kid that said those were dolls because those were not dolls. Barbies were dolls. G.I. Joes were G.I. Joes, by the way. And but similarly, there was he had some big giant tower, some sort of obstacle course. And they came down one Christmas and the tower was just, you know, standing there. And, you know, at that point, I think the tower is almost as big as my, almost as big as myself. You know, it was pretty, pretty happening.
Wow.
Did you ever get any instruments for Christmas?
Yes, I did get, I got a PV amp for Christmas and a chorus pedal. Don't tell. It wasn't a super chorus. I think just a regular, which I'm so embarrassed about. I thought that was the cool thing.
Oh, Lisa, I want you to tell me that again because I didn't quite hear. You were telling me you got an instrument for Christmas?
Well, it wasn't an instrument. It was an amplifier. It was a PV amp, and I've gotten a chorus pedal. I did get a keyboard, but that was recently. And I got, these are all really goofy. Like they're not even like cool. Like I'm mixing all my years up. Forgive me. My parents, I got an amp and I got a chorus pedal. But in my adult life, I got a bass. What the heck is the name of the bass? I always forget the name of the bass. It's the one the guy in the cars plays. Oh no.
I'll have to look that up later. When you were growing up, did you have any take any music lessons as a child?
No, I rebelled against those because I was afraid that they would take away my own creativity and I would have to learn. It's like, you know, if you're just a natural when it comes to painting and then someone goes, no, you need to learn my style. It's like, but why? That doesn't make sense. Like, you know,
I totally understand that. What was it then that got you rocking or power popping? I know you got this interest in Christmas music, you know, from when you were very small, but what was it that got you kind of rocking and power popping?
So when I would go see bands play and I'd see guys up on stage playing drums or playing guitar, I just knew I wanted to play that. So I'd obsess over, it made me more boy crazy, but once I would learn that instrument, then I was less boy crazy about that person, if that makes sense. But I will say that the first thing that really got me was I was being babysat, but I was at their house and her son had a band and they would rehearse and I just watched them, but I'd stare at the drums. Like that was what I wanted to play so badly. And he was nice enough to let me sit. And I was probably like 6 or 7. And I was just like in awe. Like I was like very respectful. I remember that just being very careful, but I loved that instrument so much. And I still do to this day.
Very cool. That reminds me, it was several years ago and it was here in LA that Rocky Erickson played a show and was billed as a ice cream social. And the only way you could go is if you had a child, right? Are you familiar with this? This was, you know, maybe,
I know about ice cream socials.
Right. Well, and so he played like half a dozen songs took my daughter. And then there was a question and answer period afterwards, and only kids could ask questions. No adults, only kids could ask questions. But and the kids, you know, were all more, it wasn't like teenagers, you know, it was kids as young as three, four, up throughout 7, maybe 8 in general. And every question they would ask, and so they'd ask Rocky a question, and the questions were like, does a drummer have to practice a lot? What kind of wood are the drumsticks made of? I mean, all the questions were about drums and drumming. And I just wonder if that's for little kids, that's the thing they see that they connect with first.
Wow, that's genius. I would have never thought, what kind of wood are those drumsticks made of? Wow.
I know. Well, what was there? So you're watching these like this one particular band. And then as you're getting older, you're seeing these other performers playing and you want to do that. Was there any one moment or epiphany where you just didn't want to play, but you realized that you had to make your own music?
From watching other bands?
Well, was there any one moment where you realized that not only did you want to play music, but you wanted to make your own music?
No, I think it was just always just there. It was just always like, I was always in the energy of it. So whatever was there, I was just with it and just guided. And like, you know, when the recycler was still around and I was ready to just play, I just make calls. It was never even, I never even had to think about it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick up a recycler and see where I can play. But the thing was, is I remember the first garage band I got to play with, they saw me as a girl and they were a 60s kind of cover band. And they're like, oh, why don't you go in the garage and learn the songs and we'll be outside. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, why can't we just jam, you know? Yeah. But it's just always there.
Well, that's interesting too. So you, when you talked about, you know, seeing these different musicians playing and this sort of tied to this boy craziness. So there wasn't really a female role model for you. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I love Petula Clark growing up. And I was a really big Bangles fan because I thought they were kind of like guys. They weren't girly at all to me. They mostly liked the music I liked and they were mostly sung by men or boys. And so I think that's kind of the female role model that I will gravitate towards, or Leslie Gore, those kind of girls.
Well, I want you to repeat that because I didn't quite hear you. I heard you say Leslie Gore, but what was the band that you...
So growing up, I liked Petula Clark, Leslie Gore. I liked mostly guy music, a lot of guy music. Like I was always, I love the masculine, yet I can put a female spin on it. And I love the Bangles. So the Bangles to me were like guys. They took they saw, they would not attack music. What is, they would approach music with that, like they were guys in the 60s. To me, that's what they're, you know, but they're still very female.
So I know you're involved with a number of cool ongoing music projects right now, but I want us to focus first on you and Super Raid and our coolest song in the world this week, A Very Merry Christmas. Can you tell me something about Paul Ryan, or rather Trip Ryan, who he is, and about Super Raid?
Sure. So Trip, he, that's what I call him. He, when we just kind of chat with each other, I say Trip. He calls me Ellie for short. And he's from Scotland. His music is Super 8, but it's really just him. And he creates musical soundscapes. He also sings, but for some reason, like what he brings to me is like something like a canvas that's really inspiring to work with. So
can you say that again? What he brings is what?
Is like a canvas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, it's easy to create with him because of those soundscapes he does. He's really, he's got a really interesting take on how he puts music together. And yeah.
So how in the world, you mentioned him being in Scotland, how did you guys come in contact with one another?
He had a song that he wanted me to sing. And so I was learning it while I was at the beach. And I asked him, you know, can I just tweak some words here and there and kind of make it more personal, which he's mm-hmm. totally open with, thank goodness, because then you can kind of work together and put your own like soul into it.
Yeah.
And so from there, after we did that song, then he was like, hey, why don't we make an EP? So it kind of just grew and grew and grew.
Well, how did you make this initial connection though? How did he even know to reach out to you?
Yeah, he just reached out. And I think people find him pretty easy to talk to. And so I think he just took a chance. And also though, now that you mention it, we were both on Future Man Records at one point, but I didn't know him, but he knew of me. Mm-hmm. So we both were there, and then we both were not with Future Man. And so I think he just, that was kind of that moment of why don't I reach out to this person I have something in common with? So that could have been it.
Yeah. So why did you guys decide to do a Christmas song?
This Christmas song, I think I love Christmas so much. So that's just easy. And I think it takes us out of just making albums, making songs that are for all year long. And I don't know, that's an interesting question. I guess it's just fun.
It's fun. So the writing process has got to be, you're sending things back and forth. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever actually been in the same room before? Have you met, physically met?
No, but he was in my dream once. So in my own personal experience, I feel that I have met him before. And it was it felt so real, and it was really magical. And I woke up and I told him all about it. And I'm like, we were like ruling the world with just what we had. And in the sense of we were in our highest power as a duo. It was crazy. So to me, it was real.
Well, cool. Well, my understanding, and you have to tell me if this is right or not, is that the two of you guys are going to have a full-length album out on Gem Records sometime next year.
Yep, that's what we're working on right now, and it's fun.
Do you have any idea what time of the year that'll come out, like in the spring or the summer or the fall?
Yeah, you're probably pretty accurate with those first three seasons, sometime probably in those. And then we have another little exciting something coming with Gem. that I can't really talk about, but yeah, there's some very exciting things coming. So I'm so grateful for Jem. They're like so much fun to work with. They keep us so busy.
You know, one of our DJs here in the Underground Garage is Speedy John. And he told me that he had played with you, John, this is John Carlucci, yeah, that he had backed you at an international pop overthrow gig. For folks who haven't attended those festivals, can you explain that to us? What's the international pop overthrow?
So those that are familiar with the power pop scene of the 70s, there was this really long, silent time, 80s possibly, and then power pop seemed to resurface in the mid 90s. And to keep it going, we had one festival called Poptopia, and I'm talking LA, Los Angeles only is all I know about. And then when they kind of dropped off, there was this new energy building. And then came David Bash, who created International Pop Overthrow, where bands from all over the world would come to Los Angeles. They'd have these elaborate parties. They had some, I had to work, so I missed most of those. But it was a place for people to come together that were all playing the same music, and the internet wasn't as strong yet. So it was very exciting, right? Meeting your people, your tribe, right?
Right.
But since then, David Bash has had to go out and create these festivals out of Los Angeles. So he'll have one here, but now he has to travel because people can't really afford to do that LA thing anymore. Mm-hmm. At least in our current scene. So he showcases bands that are power pop, but beyond that, he's anything close to that, you know, same kind of music, the melody, not necessarily, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Are you still involved with it in any degree?
Yeah. So we still get the invitation. And every year he puts out a CD that bands have the opportunity to have a song on. And David Bash has established some incredible connections that help musicians just to be heard and seen. And he'll capture them on video and post those on Facebook or other social media. And he's just doing such great work for musicians. So I love International Pop Overthrow. Really great festival.
You have a number of other projects outside of working with Super 8, including the 7 and 6. Mm-hmm. I think there's also the Lisa Michaels 3. Is that right? There's another one. And there's the Checkered Hearts. And I want to talk about the Checkered Hearts for a moment, because over the course of the pandemic, I started doing this Zoom game night with friends. And through that, I met Hillary Burton.
Oh my God, you're a part of that.
Right. So Hillary, as you know, very talented singer-songwriter. And she fronts the LA band Honey Chain, who we play here in the Underground Garage. And she was also the drummer in the Reformed Pandoras. So she's the other half of the Checkered Hearts. Is that right?
That is correct.
And how did you two know each other?
We go back to middle school, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So she had, I thought she was just the coolest looking girl I've ever seen. And so I knew I had to meet her. And so I was right, because she was that cool. And she had really good taste in music. Her dad was a musician, had the most incredible collection of punk rock vinyl and beyond. And I was just in awe. And so I went over to her. Well, we became friends. I kind of tricked her, but we became friends. And I went over to her house, and she had all these instruments, and we just got the idea, hey, we should start a band, you know, kind of thing. So it grew from there.
From middle school. So the Checkered Hearts is in the first time that you two have collaborated.
Right. So our first, we had a band. We were clubbing since 16 when we weren't really allowed to be in those clubs. We played the Cavern. And we played a mod show, you know, when there was no scene. So they had to put, you know, like punk with mod and new wave and jazz. And so, so we played when we were teens, and then we grew into a more established group that played better shows, but there was still no scene. That was during like the Rebel Pebbles. Do you remember them?
No, I don't.
Oh, we played a show with them. They got signed, but then they got dropped. And let's see. And then we kind of separated, and then I had to do some growth. And I did some other musical projects. I do a lot of growing. That's why I have so many projects. I'm constantly just growing and growing and growing. So when we got back together, that would be probably 2005. Uh-huh. And we had a new project called New Shoe. And then we made two full-length albums and an EP that we didn't really push. And then we took time off. She did Honey Chain. I did some other things. And then we got back together last year? And we started working on that EP again. And we made it our own and released that. And we've been working Joystick. It's called Joystick by the Checkered Hearts. We've been working that this year.
And so Joystick, that's the name of the EP?
Mm-hmm. And it's covers, but it has one of our originals. And so that's kind of a fun little kickoff. But from here, we are working on originals. And we'll probably have hopefully a band by next year. Just, you know, with the times, we got to get our songs and stuff going. I have my wardrobe, though. My wardrobe is all ready to go.
What is your wardrobe?
It's just hanging up in the closet.
No, but describe what is the wardrobe for the Checkered Hearts. Yeah.
It's just checkered stuff, like checkered hair things, checkered tie, checkered socks.
That's great.
So crazy.
I want to ask you about some of the some of the tunes you cover. Like that Christy McCall, Tracy Ullman song, They Don't Know About Us. Mm-hmm. Is that on the EP?
That sure is, yep.
That sure is. And you also do a version of Love Buzz, the shocking blues song, the Nirvana cover.
That one we did. That was just for a anti-Valentine show last year that we did it was an event. It was a virtual event. So that was fun.
Cool. Well, do you also have a radio show? I was looking at your your Facebook page or something. It said 54321 radio show.
So that's Luxuria Music. We have a show every Sunday from 4 to 6, and we play a different theme each week. So, I get to every once in a while pull out power pop. The coolest power pop, and because it's already kind of obscure, that's a lot of fun. And we do 60s up to close to today. Today's music is cool enough.
Well, how would somebody tune into that?
So they would go to luxuriummusic.com and the schedule's there. So many great shows, a lot of musicians and a lot of people you might know actually have a show on there somewhere. And there's a chat room, so you could talk to us when we're live. it's pretty cool. And I gotta say, it's a really nice community. Excuse me. It's a really nice community of like minds. And just for instance, if I have a really bad day, I'll tune in to Luxuria and I'll go straight to the chat room. Uh-huh. And I know that I will get to talk to people and I'll just feel so much better. And we're listening to music together that's being played at that time, whatever show is on.
Very cool. Well, the other track I'd like us to take a listen to before we head out or wrap up here is your version of Don't Worry Baby that y'all did, you and Super 8, for the Gem Records Celebrates Brian Wilson tribute album. You were talking about Gem Records. They're always up to something, doing something cool. So that record came out this past summer. How important is Brian Wilson as a songwriter to you?
He's Beach Boys, They're just, they've had that, I think for a lot of us, just they've been a part of our memories. So like mm-hmm. if you go back and think of a time in your life, you might think of a Beach Boys song, and their music was so sometimes melancholy, sometimes just there was something about that music that was different than most everything else. And when my friends, the Wonderments, became their Brian Wilson's backing band, that was really nice, because I know how much Darian, who's his main guy, mm-hmm. just he admires him so much. And growing up through my mid late teens into now, I mean, I've known them so long. Like Brian Wilson, or Team Brian Wilson, could not have picked better people to really keep him alive in the way he should be, and how he's actively still performing and giving. And we've gotten to see him, and we just saw him a few months ago, I think. And it was, I gotta tell you, it was so magical. I've never been in a room with just so much shared love, if that makes sense. Just everybody was so respectful and just grateful to be there. I ended up talking for 45 minutes with this beautiful couple. Like, I think they were in their 90s. Like, the woman was in a wheelchair, and she's like, oh, that was so great. And I was like, whoa, this is so crazy. And just, yeah, and there was a dog there. There was a dog in the audience. So I know it was for, you know, someone that needed a dog, but still, like, everyone was there. And it was beautiful. And it wasn't just a show. It was the energy of the whole room. Like, that's incredible that that can even exist, you know?
Well, the song that you guys do, I mentioned, Don't Worry, Baby. So why did you settle on that track to record?
That one, I think that trip of Super 8, I believe he picked both the songs that we did. And so he put Don't Worry, Baby in a girl group style. So I just followed it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, he did that soundscape that I just kind of like, oh, I can do this. I can add to this, you know, kind of thing.
And how long did it take you guys to put that together?
Let's see. Since working with Gem Records, hi, Marty, and Kurt, I've had to actually step up my game. So I used to be kind of lazier with vocals, and here, where it would have probably taken me one night, it probably took me a week to just make sure that I had the song right. Mm-hmm. Since I record my own vocals now. And it's probably, we work pretty fast.
Yeah. So you mentioned recording your own vocals. So you have a studio set up in your home?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's in my bedroom. And I use a, currently using an SM58 that seems to work really well for me. People always ask me, what kind of mic are you using on your vocals? But I might play with some new sounds for this year, especially for the new record. So we'll see. And we'll have more to talk about.
That's right. And I look forward to that. Right now, though, I'm going to thank you for joining me on today's Coolest Conversations, our Christmas Eve Coolest Conversations. Yay. And I want to wish you the merriest of Christmases and the happiest of New Year's.
Thank you. You too. Merry Christmas.
And now here's Lisa Michaels and Super 8 with their version of the Brian Wilson Beach Boys song, Don't Worry, Baby, in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I'm
That was some of Don't Worry Baby, as performed by Lisa Michaels and Super 8. Their version of the Beach Boys song is off the Gem Records Celebrates Brian Wilson tribute album. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Lisa for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. My guest next time will be English singer-songwriter Sam Fender. His latest album is called 17 and Under. We'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it decide, baby, diamond ring.